Hello again, everybody. This is James Bartley, and you're listening to the Cosmic Switchboard Show. Today, our very special guest is Freeman. Freeman really needs no introduction. He's a pioneer in our field of real intensive interviews, real intensive commentaries. He's basically set the model for which many of us, myself included, have followed in this field, and his work speaks for itself. So without any further ado, Freeman Fly, welcome back to the Cosmic Switchboard Show.
Hey, thank you, James. Right off the bat, it's funny because I do feel like I need an introduction. And not that I'm jumping on you. It's just that I find, you know, the people that know me and have known my work for all this time, I mean, they know. But those peers in my field, those people around in the conferences, the bigger shows, the things that, like, everybody that does what I do, not the podcasting, but the research work, has no idea who I am. And so I find this amazing. Like, you know, I could walk into the Secret Space Conference and they wouldn't know that I'd be worth talking to.
Yeah. That's happened to me. You know, it's like I'd hear a couple of gals at a conference talking about alien abductions and stuff. And I'd, you know, kind of sidle over. Yeah, you know, my name is James and I'm interested in this subject. I've had my own experience. It's like, who are you? It's like, why are you talking to me? It's like, okay, you know, and then I slink away. But I think part of the problem, Freeman, is that you and I, we don't thump on our chest like Tarzan. We don't blow smoke. We don't have this megalomaniac, maniacal attitude about ourselves. And because we're not into the self-promotion, like so many in this field or wannabes in this field are, I think we suffer for it in some way, if you know what I mean.
I think honestly,
that's my feeling.
I've been having a bit of an existential crisis, and I apologize to any of the listeners that have, you know, stood behind me all this time. But honestly, you know, I reached kind of a point where I'm like, when is anyone going to listen? when are they going to? And for 13 years, I've been told, dude, you are going to be the biggest thing ever. You know, when people back in the day, when they started seeing my work, they're like, you're going to be, you know, and I've heard this for, you know, my entire career. you're going to be famous. You're going to be known. And I'm like, yeah, when I'm dead, I guess, you know.
Yeah. Well,
you know, that's talking about my peers, not the listeners. All right. Right. I just want to make that clear. These are the people that are out there doing the conferences, doing these things. And anyway, I didn't mean to get us off on this tangent.
No, I've gone through the same thing. It's like I've been invited to conferences. No one really seems to know who I am. They know that I talk about aliens and, you know, the scary reptilian stuff. And I talk about my lab stuff, but they convert that into the new language of secret space. So I don't use that terminology, right? Because I think it's been hijacked and it's been turned into a marketing slogan. So I go out there, I talk about my stuff, and then, you know, I get a good reaction from it, but then I go away. And then, you know, it's like who was that guy, basically, you know? But in other places, in other parts of the world, I'm kind of well known. So it just varies. But I really believe that we just don't, you know, trumpet ourselves enough. I think that's the problem.
Maybe so. And I am being super censored right now, and I have been censored from day one. So at this moment, I'm censored from tweeting news articles. I can tweet that I can't tweet news articles, but I can't tweet news articles. I am blocked from Facebook. I am blocked on YouTube. I can't upload to YouTube for 3 months because I received 2 strikes during the purge.
Oh, geez.
Luckily, I did not receive the third and have 13 years. I mean, the longest running talk show on YouTube. I mean, I'm in a documentary about YouTube celebridom, you know, on HBO. And it's, you know, I'm one strike away, man, from all of that. It's all the years of collecting the weirdest videos I could, a massive database. I've been on YouTube before Google owned YouTube, as long as YouTube has existed. That's why I'm in the documentary about its origins. I'm about to lose my channel that just doesn't make any sense at all. I mean, for one thing, let me just throw this out. The the YouTube channel is not my primary source, right? The hope is that everyone goes to freemantv.com where nothing is censored, nothing is banished, nothing is banned. You know, I can say what I want. I pay for the server. It's my space. I do what I want, right? So the hope of putting things on YouTube is everyone will come to the website. But what I've found is, like, right now, I can't upload to YouTube. I can't go to YouTube and say, hey, guys, I can't upload. You got to come to the website. Instead, the audience just seems to think, generally, I've learned this over experience, right, that I just quit. So there hasn't been, my show hasn't been on YouTube now for 2 weeks because the strikes have been that, you know, over these 2 weeks. So the people on YouTube, the 15,000 that listen every week on YouTube, will just never know what happened to me. And yeah, part of this is, you know, that they don't think to go to the website. You know, it's kind of a conundrum there, you know, like if they're like, why'd you quit? I'm like, I didn't quit. Everything's going on at freemantv.com, but you got to come there because YouTube censored me. They blocked me. They banned me. I can't tweet. I can't Facebook. I can't do anything. I'm now corralled into freemantv.com. You know, I am completely censored at this moment.
It's just unfortunate that YouTube has these arbitrary subjective policies where they can pick at a 3-second soundbite from a video you did 10 years ago and say, oh, that's hate speech, that's hateful, that's racist, or whatever the case may be, and then just use that as an excuse to shut down your whole channel. But it seems to me there is a purge going on. They're shutting down the comms for a lot of people.
Absolutely, absolutely. I mean, InfoWars went down, Richie from Boston went down, Richie Allen went down. I came very close. Because these strikes just come out of nowhere. They're retroactively applied. They were shows that were 3 years old, and suddenly, you know, they violated these community agreements. But now here's the rub. There's a person who cloned my YouTube channel a year ago and even titled it Freeman TV. So there is another Freeman TV on YouTube that has existed for a year, has 700 followers, subscribers, right? But it's all my work, right? Mm-hmm. He has hundreds of my videos up there. Well, the videos that I received the strikes for which my longest running YouTube channel is about to be deleted, are still sitting there on his channel, unabated, uncensored.
Yeah, that must be particularly irksome.
Yeah, and it shows that it is targeting, you know, if it were the material, then his channel would have been targeted as well, and those videos would not exist. They would have been deleted like mine were. So obviously they're targeting me over, but you know what? The videos are going to stay on YouTube thanks to this person who I have no idea who it is. You know what I mean? So whatever, I don't care.
Yeah, whatever works. And they can always go back to Freeman Fly TV. And when I look at the body of your work, you've done so much to put out the true esoteric side of things. In the recent past, I've talked about how esoterica has been hijacked by, you know, people, and they've just spun it out of all recognition. But you've remained true to your roots. So you've shown people that, look, this whole global control matrix has esoteric, occultic, Luciferian roots, and here's why. And you break it down brilliantly in your videos, and then you make it understandable for the layman, and you show them the symbolism, you show them the wordplay, you show them the history behind it all. And so that fact alone is going to make them want to shut your work down, let alone all the other stuff you've come up with.
Yeah. I'm always a little bit shocked because everything that I say is not secret. It's just ignored. And so I'm always curious as to why I'm banned or blocked from certain programs and just can't find my way in, when everything that I talk about, I mean, you know, I talk about the cloning of mummies, all right? I talked about the cloning of mummies on my third television show. So this is 2004. I remember learning about these cloned mummies back in 1984. And than having to go to the library, find the Nexus magazine, learn, you know, or Nature magazine it was in, and learn these things. You know, when I was doing my homework for these research projects, it was library exchange programs. It was going and checking microfiche. It was, you know, there was no World Wide Web as we know it today. Google Images didn't exist. You couldn't go look. And my goal was to bring this esoteric world to you. I wanted to go to the Temple of the 33rd, the Rosicrucian temples, meet Satanists, and bring all that to you. All these things that I'd been researching and studying and reading about, I wanted to bring it to life. And so that's what FreemanTV.com became, was this, you know, just massive database of occult orders and secret societies inside. I've gone to all the different Grand Lodges, taken pictures, film, all of that, and presented it to the world. You know, this was so exciting for me.
And what that's done is it's broadened people's understanding. The people that just have like a surface level understanding of this, they see the transnational corporations, they see the mega banks exerting all this control, but they didn't realize there was a cultic Luciferian aspect to it until you brought that out. And before we came on the show, before we started, we had this brief chat, and I mentioned, and some of the listeners may remember this, there was a book years ago in the early 70s called The Outer Space Connection, and they made a movie of the same name, and Rod Serling did the narration. And in that book and in that movie, they talked about mummies, ancient Egyptian mummies, and the possibility of cloning them. So Freeman was right on the mark as far as I was concerned. And one thing about these control freaks, listeners, dear listeners, is that if it feels good, they're going to do it. They're not restrained by ethics, morality, conscience. All of that goes out the window. If they have the means to do something, no matter what the consequences, okay, think Jurassic Park here, they will do it. And so I have no doubt that they've probably cloned some of these mummies and the pharaohs they used to be.
No, hold on. You say you have no doubt. You can prove it to yourself without doubt. You will have no doubt. No, let me just lay some of this out, because the very first bioethics committee to ever meet, all right, first time doctors ever decided to come together and say, all right, we need a little bit of outlines of where we're going to go with the medical industry, right? The very first time the bioethics committee ever met, all these doctors came together. The question that was posed was, what do we do when we clone Amenhotep? Okay, that was the, I've been trying to find my library's in disarray right now, but there is a direct quote of the first bioethics medical committee and the statement and who said it, you know? That the concern was, what do we do when we clone Amenhotep? Well, Amenhotep is Akhenaten's original name.
Yes.
He changed it to Akhenaten when he turned to the worship of the Aten and Akhenaten, you know. So he was Amenhotep, right? His dad was Amenhotep. But now, 1984, they cloned mummies. It was in Nature magazine. It was in the New York Times. You can Google it. You can just go, when did they clone mummies? And it'll show you the article, 1984, we cloned mummies. And it wasn't that, okay, so cloning, that word gets so tossed about. I could say we stem cell researched mummies, right? Because these are interchangeable concepts. But when they use stem cell research, nobody thinks they're talking about cloning, but you clone stem cells, right? That's how you do stem cell research. It's cloning. So when you say that they cloned mummies, they did clone mummies. They cloned mummies from the period of Akhenaten. And it's right there in a peer-reviewed science, you know, document. It's there for you in Nature magazine, New York Times. It was covered. Now, what was fascinating, you know, these clones are not brought to life. They are not injected into an egg and then brought to life. They are cloned. The mystery was that a cell 2,500 years old stayed viable for cloning due to the process of mummification that we do not understand. So this says the Egyptians had a technology in the ancient past, 2,500 years ago, that allowed for them to transmit a viable cell throughout time to be cloned at the time when we have the ability. And they did it. And there's no doubts. There's no questions. This was the very first thing that the medical authorities wanted to deal with. What do we do when we clone a manatee? And then, you know, they cloned the period of Akhenaten. Now, when they discovered Akhenaten, the KV-55 mummy mystery, this was a time when archaeologists didn't really care a whole lot. And the sketches and the things that they did to bust into Akhenaten's tomb were pretty horrendous. But they busted in there and they found these things and they found stuff. But every term for Akhenaten was scrawled out, scratched out, defaced, defiled. Mm-hmm. But they found Queen T's toilet. They found the daughter's canopic jars. They found... you know, all the things of Akhenaten, but there were all these different bodies in there. The younger lady, the older lady, the mysterious body that when first found was determined to be a woman. And then when researched again, determined to be a man. And they believed that this was Akhenaten, but no one knew for sure. Now, 100 years later, Zahi Hawass becomes the undersecretary of, and the secretary of the Giza Plateau. Zahi Hawass was termed like the, Indiana Jones of the modern day or of reality, right? He's a super pompous guy, but he's in charge of everything that goes on at the pyramids and the Giza Plateau, and all of the alternative researchers battle with this guy. He stands in the face of everything that we're seeing about ancient civilizations and the fact that they are beyond our technological abilities in the 21st century. He stands there and says they built the pyramid with sticks and rocks and they dragged these with slave labor and they built these things, which is absolutely impossible. I personally went to Kansas University's School of Architecture and I can tell you that it is physically impossible for us to build the Great Pyramid in the 21st century. We only have three cranes capable of lifting some of the blocks, not all of them. And certainly we have nothing that could build Baalbek, Lebanon. So even if you don't want to look at the pyramids, you know, you can't touch Baalbek, but the pyramids as well. So we know this for a fact, but Zahi stands in the face of all this screaming and shouting, you know, oh no, you're ridiculous. Meanwhile, his entire career was funded by the Association of Research and Enlightenment. Mm-hmm. This is the group that was formed around Edgar Cayce's work on Atlantis. So one day I'm at the ARE. I'm at the Association of Research and Enlightenment, and there's this huge buzz going on. Everybody's kind of tripping out, and I'm wondering what's going on. Turns out Barbara Bush had just walked out of the room that I was in. Well, Barbara Bush, George H.W. Bush were both at the ARE, this Edgar Cayce Psychic Research Center to discover Atlantis. And they're there to witness Zahi Hawass giving a lecture. Now realize, folks, we had to leave. I didn't get to see it. I'm really mad. I should have done everything I could to stay, but I didn't. But here's the point, you know, here is the guy who stands in the face of all alternative research on ancient civilizations and high civilizations in the ancient past. And he is giving lectures at the place that says Atlantis is real and that these civilizations have cyclical catastrophes and these things have been going on and on, and technology was lost and we gained it and lost it. And yet he, you know, they paid for Zahi Hawass's university degree. And now he's the one standing in the face of everything. Of course, they just fired him, you know, a couple years ago over sexual harassment and taking bribes for archaeological digs. He was, oh, man. Okay, so Zahi Hawass then finally got the Discovery Channel to give him $6 million. I think it was $6 million. Regardless, they got the Discovery Channel to build a DNA lab underneath the Cairo Museum so that Zahi Hawass could finally prove that he had Akhenaten's DNA. And so I had already put out the theory that I believed Barack Obama, Michelle Obama, Malaya, and Sasha are all clones of this family of Akhenaten, and the images stand for themselves. But what I didn't have was the fact that they had Akhenaten's DNA, because the KV-55 mummy mystery has remained that for over 100 years, a mystery. But what happened, Zahi got the Discovery Channel to build that DNA lab, would not allow any other DNA lab in the world to touch these samples until he got his hands on it. And then he announced to the world, I have it on VHS. I have Akhenaten's DNA scan on film. As Zahi Hawass announced to the world, I have the DNA of Akhenaten right here. And he showed it to all of us. And that was after, that was the last piece of the puzzle I needed. I was already had the whole theory laid out, but I could not prove that they had Akhenaten's DNA until Zahi Hawass did this. And suddenly, boom, I'm like, oh my God, guys. And I'm broadcasting all of this live. Like, all of this is in my archives. Every revelation as it occurs is there. I'm a researcher, not a radio show host. What you get from my early shows is the research. I'm peer reviewing my research right in front of you. And so the things that I could list that have occurred to fulfill this theory and make it a pretty positive truth are many, many.
What do you think the ultimate purpose of bringing Akhenaten back in this time frame and, you know, in the form of Barack Obama? And then, you know, backtracking a little bit, I see Akhenaten's reign as a key nodal point in history. Yeah, we went from pantheism to, that's really where monotheism started, and then all the wars of religion afterwards, which ensued, it could all be traced back to, you know, the cult of Aten. But anyhow, you know, fast forward to the present, and, you know, the Obama administration was a watershed in many ways. Why do you think they brought him back at this particular time?
Well, consider this as well. Young, Carl Jung, and many others back in that period, and even now, believed Akhenaten to be Moses.
Yes, I've read that, yes.
Yeah, you can pretty much interchange these two. And of course, Akhenaten is the go-to guy of every ancient astronaut theorist out there, with his cone head and things of that nature, and his bizarre religion, and the fact that he instituted the most realistic artistic period Egypt had ever known. Which makes me laugh when I see Barack Obama's presidential portrait, because that was the very thing everybody was angry at Akhenaten about. He took the austere dimensions and the mighty pharaoh imagery of the past and destroyed it and created the most artistically real artworks of himself, with flowers and leaves and vines and his children. And this just really offended everyone. And if you put Barack Obama's presidential portrait up next to any other presidential portrait, you'll see he did the exact same thing, throwing in all those leaves and flowers and vines. You know, it was exactly what Akhenaten would have done. Here's the thing. Every Grand Lodge of Freemasonry around the planet, and I got pictures of them all, has a shrine to Akhenaten. The Rosicrucians in California have a shrine to Akhenaten. The book by Manly P. Hall, The Secret Destiny of America, Chapter 2, Akhenaten, the First Democrat, a Man Born Way Too Soon. If we could bring anyone back, it would be Akhenaten. I told you about the Medical Ethics Committee. First, yeah. Worry, what happens when we bring back Akhenaten? So when you realize that Akhenaten is the prime force for Freemasonry, Rosicrucianism, he is believed to be the original Rosicrucian and have founded that order. Unto Thee I Grant is a book by the Rosicrucians that is believed to be written by Akhenaten. So he is this primal force, right? This moment that changed everything. So let's clear up cloning real fast. What is a clone? We are not saying that Barack Obama is Akhenaten with memories or any of that sort of thing. What a clone is an identical twin born at a separate moment. So just as any identical twin, there are similarities. There are attributes and ideas and things that happen with twins that, you know, we can't explain. NASA was doing experiments with the twins, Mark and Scott Kelly, on the International Space Station. Some twin DNA studies on these two. The Nazis, of course, and their twin experiments. So anyway, you're dealing with an identical twin. But this identical twin is not born of a mother's spark. It's not born of that spark of life that we don't understand. It's born of a spark of electricity. And that is what tricks the cell into realizing it's alive and starts to multiply, is the electricity shocked into the cell that now has the DNA of another being. So this is, you know, cloning is going on all the time, right? There are millions of clones being made for food. The Boya Life from China is cloning millions of cattle. I mean, clone cows have been legal since the 90s. The FDA said, yeah, clone meat, no problem, right? We now have glow-in-the-dark mosquitoes, glow-in-the-dark cats, glow-in-the-dark sheep. They just made a sheeple, right? They just made a hybrid of a human and sheep. This sheep has the code of the DNA removed for its pancreas, and inserted is the code for a human pancreas. And so these sheep were allowed to gestate inside of a womb for 29 days to prove that they could grow a human pancreas inside of a sheep. And then they were aborted. Human cloning is happening all the time, not in secret labs, not anywhere. President Barack Obama came forward, and you can watch this on my documentary. I have him saying it. You know, we are releasing the restrictions for federal funding for human cloning. He, of course, called it stem cell research. Mm-hmm. But by the end of the speech, he had to use his lawyership, and he stated, we will not allow human cloning, for it is wrong and improper. And I have this whole quote on my website, for reproduction. So there's human cloning for reproduction, and there's human cloning for experimentation. So there's all kinds of human cloning experiments going on in all kinds of medical labs. We call it stem cell research. And the International Space Station, you can look this up on NASA's website. They have 30 plus stem cell human cloning experiments going on the International Space Station, seeking longevity for the astronauts. You know, these are things that are right there on the NASA website. They're not any secret. None of this is secret at all. It's just completely ignored.
George W. Bush even talked about during his administration of making funding available and creating legislation to allow more stem cell research.
Him and Arnold Schwarzenegger were in a massive battle. They were bringing stem cell babies out on the stage. It was ironic because Schwarzenegger was in that movie, The Sixth Day, right?
Yes.
All about the fear of human cloning and mind transfer technologies. Now, when you get to mind transfer technologies, it's a whole nother level. Then you can transmit yourself into your clone. Now, that's a different level. That's immortality. You know what I mean? So they had that in The Sixth Day. Now, The Sixth Day was produced by a company called Phoenix Pictures. And it was one of the ones that really struck me right off, because when their corporate logo, which is the thing that I just love to decipher, they strike a friction match and it boils up into this burning phoenix. Well, very few people know that a friction match is called a Lucifer. Huh. So they strike a Lucifer and it burns into this boiling phoenix, and you get movies like The Sixth Day and Holes with Disney. They did another one that was, you know, right along these lines. And, From Hell. right? I think they did From Hell with the, Alan Moore showing how Jack the Ripper was a Freemason, and that's why he was never prosecuted. Yeah, it's a crazy planet, man. We got glow-in-the-dark cats, man.
Yeah, they've had spider goats for some time. Were they
spider goats? You know? Yep, and artificial wombs. You know, these things are all right out in the open. Just no one's paying attention. The president gives a lecture. You know, back in the day of Dolly. All right, so Dolly was cloned, but Ian Wilmot, he didn't think anything about cloning Dolly. He wanted to clone a sheep that would produce pharmaceuticals in its milk for hemophiliacs. And so he was over there at the Roslin Institute, another very interesting place, where ancient stories come, you know, King Arthur, knights, anyway, pick up a copy of Holy Blood, Holy Grail. He didn't expect any notoriety for cloning this sheep, Dolly. You know, he just took a cell. He didn't even know where the nipple came from that he cloned, and he didn't care. He was just trying to make this thing. But then it became, you know, huge news. He got on the cover of Time magazine and all of this. But there was no money in cloning. And that was the problem. There was just no Boy Alive also is, I believe, the company that will clone your pets. And so Barbara Streisand just got two clones of her dog. The China cloned a super dog. So now we're talking genetic manipulation to create a super dog and then cloning that dog multiple times after it's dead, which is curious. And one of my favorite cloning stories was Chance, the Brahma bull. And Chance was this Brahma bull that was a friend of the family, and he died. And so they decided to clone him. They brought back Second Chance, the clone of Chance. And this thing was sinister. It was like the most evil thing you've ever seen in your life. It gouged the people. It gouged the father. It ripped his scrotum with its horns, you know. And this is all documented. It's on a documentary. I can't remember the name, but, you know, you can watch as Chance is brought before you, and you can just see the look in Second Chance's eye, like, dude, these clones are evil. And what it really makes me wonder is about that spark, the difference between the mother spark that gives life and the electricity spark that clones, you know, ignites a clone. You know, what is electricity? We don't know. And we're starting to find that we can shoot demons through the electrical lines and things of this nature, stuff like Serge Manasse talked about in the Blue Beam. You know, what is going on with electricity, and why does that, you know, what difference does that make in the soul of a clone, I wonder?
Yeah, that's increasingly going to be an issue, because, I mean, you just look around society and you're already seeing people that seem to be soulless, that seem to be empty vessels, and, you know, nature or supernature abhors a vacuum, so entities tend to jump into people that are kind of empty vessels. So if a clone is created and it wasn't created with, quote, the spark of life, again, nature abhors a vacuum. Like, what gets in there in its stead?
Well, can we get a little weird?
Yeah, let it rip.
I mean, everything I've said is just straightforward, right? News articles, like, nothing weird. I haven't speculated at all. This is all just exactly what has occurred. But to speculate a little bit, the Avatar program, this Russian Itchkoff that wanted to get all the entrepreneurs or all the billionaires to pay in for immortality to finally have mind transfer technology that will put your soul into a hologram. You don't have to worry about a body anymore, right? But first robots, then hologram. Well, first robots, then clones, then holograms is kind of the immortal plan. And he tried to sell this Avatar program to DARPA. And they were like, yeah, we don't need that. We have our own Avatar program, soul transfer technology, mind transfer technology. The Russians, they talked about this way back in the 90s, right? But now we're actually getting to the point where we have the computing power to do soul or mind transfer technologies, because it takes exabytes of information. This is massive packets of information. But CERN, actually, their grid, their LHC grid at CERN, this computer network, has the ability. So it's the first publicly known computer that has the ability, I'm not saying it's doing it, but it is a computer capable of soul or mind transfer technology. When I started to look at, well, what if they were trying to send Akhenaten back here, you know? What if his body was just a receptacle and they're just trying to make a link into the ancient past? You know, this is where I start to get weird. And reach that moment of Akhenaten where they can transmit his soul back into Obama's body. Well, it was right as I'm thinking about this concept that they suddenly announced that there was a bust of what appeared to be Michael Jackson. And it showed up, well, it had been in the museum in Chicago, I believe, for some time, according to this timeline. But no one had ever noticed this ancient bust of Michael Jackson in the museum until after Michael died. Now, the strangest thing is that Michael was into all of these things. He ran around with Uri Geller. And Uri Geller is that Israeli psychic that could bend keys and things on television and seemingly read minds and such. And he was used by the elite, according to the Stargate conspiracy book, to channel the group of the Nine.
Yes.
Which is, yeah, that extraterrestrial or ancient group of Egyptian gods, right? The Ennead. But he never said that the Nine were the ancient gods of Egypt. He actually said the Nine were an ancient AI orbiting the planet in a ship called Spectre.
Hmm.
But Uri Geller and Michael Jackson ran around together seeking immortality. And they first looked into robots, as much as do. Now, of course, we have Sophia, who just received her citizenship from Saudi Arabia, and she is now the first, you know, official robot citizen. But the robots back in the time when Uri and Michael Jackson were running around were not quite so, they weren't ready for the Atlas yet, right? Now, these killer robots that they built, the Atlas and the others that are like dogs and such, they were owned by Google for a time. You know, they were created by Boston Dynamics, but then Google bought these killer robots to go with their AI, their largest DNA database, and their, you know, secret, you know, Google is Skynet, right? They have robotic space planes. They have, and all of this is public. But of course, they sold those killer robots to the richest man in Japan who owns a corporation called SoftBank. So SoftBank now owns all those killer robots. But these robots weren't available when Michael Jackson and Uri Geller were trying to get one. They found this robot called A-Rock. And you can watch this on a documentary called, home something. Oh man, well, it's a documentary on unusual homes, and I can't think of the name, but home is in the name, and it's about unusual homes. And the robotic home, the roboticist that built the robot home, he built the robot for Michael Jackson. But of course, this robot can't dance or moonwalk, so eventually Michael decided, no, I'm not going to get this robot and do that, so let's start looking into clones. So if you go to CloneAid right now, and CloneAid is the corporation that spoke before Congress in 2000 with that character Ra-El in his puffy white spacesuit. As they spoke before Congress to tell them, you know, human cloning is happening now. We're cloned people already, and it's going to continue to happen because thankfully you can't stop science. And this is what they told Congress in 2000. It was actually 1999. Brigitte Bousselet announced, we have birthed the first clone. We call her Eve. You can watch that. It was on C-SPAN, CNN, and it's in my documentary. So that's 1999, right? Already we have it before Congress, but we have puffy, you know, a guy in a puffy white spacesuit talking about him being funding the cloning. So if you go to CloneAid's website right now, you will see how excited they are that they have Michael Jackson's DNA and they plan to clone him. Just as there is a dentist in Canada who has John Lennon's tooth and has every intention of cloning him. But that's a little more bizarre. So Michael Jackson then seemed to pass up on all of these things. And he went out and he bought a life-size replica of King Tut's golden sarcophagus. You can watch this on film as well. If you remember the moment that he hanged his genetically modified baby blanket over the window. Now, Michael Jackson's baby blanket, no one knows who his parents are. he was birthed of a unknown mother from unknown egg and sperm. Right, he's a genetically crafted baby. Look at Michael Jackson's kids; they're white.
Yeah, I mean, yeah.
You know, they're genetically modified kids. This was not in question. Again, everything I say has been news. I'm not making this stuff up. Michael Jackson's children were genetically modified. But so right before he was hanging old genetically modified blanket out the window, and everybody freaked out about Michael Jackson and, you know, his care for children, because he was on a balcony, right? He had just purchased the life-size replica of King Tut's sarcophagus. And then he's asked by the documentarian that's filming this moment. And again, you can watch all of this. It's all in the documentary. I think it's called My Day with Mike or Michael or something like that. Again, everything I'm telling you is real. He buys this life-size replica of King Tut's golden sarcophagus, and the guy says, well, are you going to be buried in this? And Michael says, no, I'm going to live forever. And, of course, when Michael died, there was all these mysterious things that went on. His body was moved in the middle of the night. There's videotape of him getting out of the back of the coroner's vehicle. You know, there's all kinds of things to say that Michael didn't actually die. Well, it was 2 months later that all of a sudden there's a bust of Michael from the period of Akhenaten that no one could explain. And it's referenced as an unknown woman in the period of Akhenaten. And there it is at the Chicago Museum. And no one noticed it until Michael died. And so, like, in this timeline, all of a sudden, so, you know, here's this whole nother potential of time travel back to the period of Akhenaten, opening a portal back there, and with the ability to then transmit Akhenaten's soul into the body of Barack Obama. Right now, Barack Obama in Hebrew, these words mean lightning from heaven, the very description of Satan in the Bible. If yes. you were to read it in Hebrew in the Bible, it would say in Barack Bama, you know, and Satan fell like Barack Bama. That is the Hebrew word for lightning from heaven. So lightning, electricity, cloning, and of course their secret service names, Renegade, Rosebud, Renaissance, and Radiance. These also all reference Akhenaten. So, you know, that's how weird it can get. But yet everything I've told you is true, other than the idea that I can prove that they have time travel or mind transfer technologies. Yet the Royal Society gathered with the head of the Blue Brain Project, along with all the lead experts in UFOs, including the extraterrestrial ambassadors, Linda Rothschild and Moslyn Offman. This was an open meeting at the Royal Society where the Blue Brain Project did present its mind transfer technologies. So, you know, it's not out there.
Well, you also pointed out years ago the similarity of some of the key characters in the Stargate SG-1 program.
Oh, right.
with people in the Obama administration. You know what?
The Stargate fans did that. The Stargate fans did that, but they didn't know what they had. So, all right, another tirade. I was searching Apophis. Okay, so I put together an artwork of Barack Obama as Akhenaten, and I put an asteroid hurtling towards his head because Carol Rosen, the secretary for Wernher von Braun, had said that the whole cycle would go, you know, Russian scare, terrorist, or asteroids, then aliens. So the next thing in the thing was asteroids, obviously. So I put together an artwork of Barack Obama as Akhenaten with an asteroid hurtling towards his head and told everyone, hey, this is the next scare tactic. You know, I predicted 9/11. Why can't I predict an asteroid, right? Well, it was the next week or the next 2 weeks, somewhere there. And you, of course, all of this is live on my channel, so you can hear me, you know, with these revelations. They announce, oh my God, there's an asteroid hurtling towards planet Earth, and it's going to destroy all life in 2029 or 2036, whichever timeline it happens to hit. And it is named Apophis,
the destroyer. You
know me? Yeah, I'm throwing my hands up, right? Because one, there's the Stargate Apophis, which we'll get to, but Apophis is the Satan of Akhenaten's religion. And the asteroid Apophis that's coming to destroy all life on planet Earth is from a group of near-Earth asteroids known as the Aten, which is Akhenaten's god, that yes. monotheism. So now I have this artwork already made. There's no way I could have known. No one knew. But yet, the very asteroid, the very doomsday asteroid that they announced to the world is called Apophis. I'm throwing my hands in the air. I'm freaking out, you know? This story is alive, and it's happening right in front of me. You know, I was already talking about them cloning Akhenaten before Zahi Hawass came with the DNA, you know? And I'm like, what? And now I put together this thing, and I'm saying this asteroid, and it's Akhenaten Satan? What? And then, you know, I'm looking up Apophis, and I come to the Stargate Forum. And I had really forgotten all about that. And they had gathered together all those pictures and didn't realize what they were really showing. But yes, so, okay, Donald Trump, President Trump, just came out last week, you know, this week, saying, I've just had an amazing idea. You're going to love it. This is a fantastic idea. Why don't we create a space force? We'll have another faction of our military. We can spend so much money on it. You're going to love it. Of course, the Air Force is saying, no, this is a ridiculous idea. It's going to interfere. It's going to cause inefficiency. We need to just back off of this altogether. Donald Trump says, no, space force, man. I was thinking about this, and we need a space force. Well, yeah, on Stargate, SG-1 or Stargate, you clearly see that they are in Space Command at Cheyenne Mountain, and they're wearing the official Space Command seal. This is, you know, 1990s that we're already aware of Space Command inside of Cheyenne Mountain, but it's now a TV show. But Stargate put out an episode about how their TV show was a cover for the real thing.
Yes.
You know, yes. They flipped that whole script.
And what's interesting is there is a character in the Stargate SG-1 series played by the actor Ronnie Cox, and he plays a very sinister senator who's always, you know, down the throat of the Stargate Command, trying to end it, trying to take control of it at various turns. And then when I look at him, I see a pretty good resemblance to Donald Trump, of all people.
I'll have to look again.
Yeah. Well, we've reached the end of a fascinating first segment, and I want you to talk more a bit about Donald Trump in the second half, Freeman, because you're just getting started on this whole train of thought. And I've gone through similar things in the past where you just seem to tap into some kind of stream of information and synchronicities pile up, and it's almost like you're just carried away by, you know, this current of information, and you just ride that thing until it, you know, it lets you off. So, you know, kudos to you for hanging on. And we still got a whole other segment to go. For our listeners out there, if you like what we do, if you believe in what we do, please go to thecosmicswitchboard.com, sign up and become a member, and we'll see you at the top of the next segment.